study that, the entire bill that closely, but I assume that that language is meant to make that section consistent with Section 1, so that, you see, permanent partial disability at the top there, B, means the loss of either one arm, one hand, et cetera. You could argue that if a fellow lost one arm, well, then he's under this and not under A. And that language in there is to make that section consistent with the concept that if he loses one arm and is unable to perform any work at a suitable and gainful occupation, he can be permanently and totally disabled. But if he is able to perform work with the loss of one arm, then he would be under the permanent partial disability. I think that's the purpose of that language.
Thank you very much. Frank?
I have a lawsuit here. Oh, I'm on the waxed.
Speak for yourself, Mr.
I sense, listening to the other speakers, that the committee doesn't really grasp what this bill is meant to accomplish. I don't know. But for years we went along assuming that you could have a permanent total disability even though it included only a scheduled injury. And then we got the Jones case, and the Court of Appeals gratuitously read something into the law that isn't there. There's nothing in there presently that says that you can't be permanently and totally disabled if you have a scheduled injury, but they read that into the act, and that's the way the law is now. And this bill is specifically meant to eliminate that problem. Now, Representative Stelz mentioned that it was a change in concept, and if it was going back to the Employers Liability Act and so on. This bill isn't meant to accomplish that. It's merely meant to eliminate the rule of that Jones case.
Same, let's be frank, my understanding was the same as yours up until the time the Jones case came.
Now, there's been some speakers and they about this thing, and Mr. McAllister stated first that it eliminates scheduled disability. I don't know where he gets that. In my opinion, it has nothing to do with scheduled disabilities on the workmen who are not permanently and totally disabled. It's still in the act, and as Mr. Stelz mentioned, if you got 50% of the arm under this bill, you'd still get it. It has nothing to do with those cases. Then he said that if you pass this bill, there's going to be 150 new permanent totals a year. Now, it seems to me to be just as relevant as if I picked a figure out of the air and said there'd be two. I don't know where he gets those figures, because we don't know how many there would be. As a matter of fact, there probably wouldn't be very many, but when you do have one of these cases, it's a tragic event for the particular worker involved. Let me give you an example of a client in our own office. We have this poor fellow that piece of pipe was dropped on his foot and smashed the bones, several of them, in his foot. And they worked with it and worked with it, and they amputated a toe and another toe, and they keep going a little more and a little more. Finally, he got to the point where they amputated his foot about halfway back. He's only got, he has no arch, and he just has a stub, and he has to wear a block in his shoe to wear a shoe. And he's foot hurting all the time. He had these phantom pains, and he went to the veterans, and he went to this doctor and that doctor, and each one of them would amputate some more. And so finally they did a sympathectomy, cut all the nerves in the leg, tried to help him that way, impaired circulation, and he got taking so many pain pills that he's goofy in the head from taking pain pills, and the poor guy can't work. And obviously, he ought to be a permanent total, but he can't get get it because of the Jones case. Now, that's a terrible injustice to any worker, and that's all in the world this bill is meant to accomplish, and it should be passed. That's all I have to say about it.
I think if we had access to jury trial, this bill might accomplish more than you're suggesting it does. In the absence of that, maybe there are safeguards there.
Well, I don't know what you have reference to, Mr. Stump, but of course, we had a jury trial. If the workman could present his case to the jury, get a final analysis. But under the present law, jury trial or no, if he was confined to something less than permanent total for scheduled injury, he wouldn't get it submitted to the jury.
Franklin, do we perhaps need a new definition of gainful and suitable occupation?
No, I think that this present definition has been there for many years. It's been, the meaning of it has been established in several different Supreme Court decisions, and I don't think you ought to fool with that definition. That's my own personal opinion. Thank you very much.
Those that all would have signed on 254 and 1545, let's go to, no one signed up on 1546. Indicating, let's go to 1595, Carl Frederick.
Just taking care of him, Senate Bill 345.
Big right.
Taking care of him, Senate Bill 345.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to suggest.
There is a Senate bill which
he's loose drawing. Like those kind of 1724 we signed up.
Kennedy's bill, I'm going to explain it.
Senate Bill 128.
Chairman, members of the committee, I don't believe that this particular bill requires very much discussion, as there was a Supreme Court decision called Place versus Friesen Lumber Company, which recently granted to the workers' compensation procedures the very same thing that this bill tries to correct. There was an opinion called Cunningham versus State Compensation Department several years ago, which said that in effect that if you file your appeal in the wrong county, you're out of court because it's jurisdictional rather than a matter of venue. And the Place versus the attorney who represented the workmen in Place versus Friesen Lumber Company didn't believe the Supreme Court, took it on up, and they reversed their opinion just a few years ago. So I don't believe that this particular bill is even necessary at this point. I think it's probably been mooted by that opinion.
Question, Mr. Miller.
You suppose there's a chance they might re-reverse themselves?
There's always that chance.
What was the name of the case?
Place versus Friesen Lumber Company. I think this is one case where the Court of Appeals, I think, probably had reason to feel put upon, because the Cunningham case had just come out about 2 or 3 years ago, and Place went to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals, of course, followed the Supreme Court opinion in Cunningham, and then the Supreme Court allowed a petition for review and reverse the Court of Appeals.
Okay. Thank you. Carl, do you want to testify?
Well, I find it refreshing to agree with Mr. Malik on the first time this session. And I have a copy of the
case for place.
Bill's not necessary, but it passed the Senate. I wonder if that's any.
Well, we didn't see that it said it was March 21st.
I just saw last week. Senate Bill 129. Forrest Reiki.
Chairman, if maybe somebody would like to speak about what the bill is substantively now, is in presence form, I have to amend it. I wonder if you want to hear from the other parties first about what the bill is intended to do.
All right, well, let's get a proponent then. Mr. Coons, you want to go first, or you want your partner to go first?
Well, this is a nice, short little bill. And obviously the intent of this bill is just to inform the workman more fully of what his rights are after a determination has been made by the closing and evaluation division of the board. The present determination orders do carry some kind of notice to the effect that if you're dissatisfied, you can request a hearing. But it seems to me to be a salutary rule to inform the injured workman that if he is aggrieved, he does have the right to be represented by an attorney, and that the attorney, whatever fees the attorney may charge, are limited by law. And I would submit that an injured workman might take some comfort in that knowledge and might very well be more ready to if he feels that he has been aggrieved, be more ready to ask for review. I think there are a lot of workmen now who don't know what their rights are with respect to legal representation, and a lot of workmen, I'm sure, think that if they do go to a lawyer, it's going to cost them a lot of money out of their own pockets. And I believe there are some lawyers who aren't familiar with the strictures placed by the state bar on the fees they can charge an injured workman. I think it would be well to place this in the Workman's Compensation Act itself.
What stage of the procedure? What stage of the procedures is this notice coming in?
This is after the determination by the closing and evaluation division of the court. After the man becomes stationary, the board sets PPD and sends out the determination. So it's in the initial stage.
Most of it yet,
man. Generally carries the, it notifies him that he has 5 years in which to aggravate it, and he's got the right to appeal within a year. Doesn't inform him anything about his right to have counsel. No other questions?
Yes, sir. Maybe I can get started over here again. But isn't there some stage in the proceedings where there's a bold-faced type telling what your rights are?
Well, if you have a determination order there, it informs the workman that he's got a right to request a hearing.
Where is it? From the hearings office?
Yes, that says you've got 30 days to appeal.
That's bold-faced, isn't it?
It's at the end. No, I don't think it's bold-faced. It's at the end of the order. And it's after the hearing officer's signature. It could get lost, but I don't think this doesn't seek to eliminate or change the present procedure there at all, as far as I can see.
I think it would be better to use some of the language in the present order rather than refer to ORS statutes. Tell him that he has a year, where he should have been.
Yes, I think so. I think you must be referring to the language which says that he has the right to request a review of the board, giving the board's address.
Right. I'm giving him a zoning may have a year.
Yes. I think that probably the language ought to be, my own feeling would be that the language ought to be amended to tell him where to send his request for review. He can, of course, prosecute the matter himself, but he's going to be sorely disadvantaged if he's not represented by counsel in most cases.
I agree.
Thank you. Mr. Mallon, did your partner cover it well enough?
Good, thank you.
Carl Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, I don't really have too much to add. Mr. Cole's comment was precisely what I wanted to stress, that I think we should retain the present language, and perhaps if you want to add something along this line and take out the reference to ORS 6, this doesn't mean anything to the workman, so I think the language could be reworked. And I question whether it's necessary to even lock it into the statute. I think the board probably would be agreeable to doing this on their own if they feel it's a great disservice to the injured workman in the state of Oregon. In fact, I think the advisory committee would be proud to take on the task of revising this particular language for them.
Right, much simpler than going through the process of running
right.
it through the legislature.
Put another bill for an act.
Why haven't we done it up to now?
Apparently, it wasn't a problem until Mr. Lynn lost his health and sight of the device.
Careful now. Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Carol. Forrest Regan. Now that everybody thinks the bill's unnecessary, how would you like to amend it?
I'm going to make it a little longer than this.
There's an old.
Sure, Larry, I'll make it longer.
How are you going to become a sore painter?
I've been singing it.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Forrest Reiki. I'm the business manager of Industrial Clinics in Portland, who about 75% of our work as a doctor's office is involved with taking care of workmen on an emergency basis. And we handle upwards of 2,000 workmen a year through our particular facility. We have a problem. And Senate Bill 129 is the organ we're using to correct it, simply because it happens to mention on the, in the sections all of the, it makes reference to all of the notice part of the statute, ORS 656.268. Our request is to amend ORS 656.265 subsection 2, which is the portion of the notice that involves the workman telling his employer that he's been injured. We would like to simplify that system slightly, simplify in our opinion, everybody agrees we're simplifying it, by allowing the an announcement from the doctor signed by the workman to qualify as the initiating organ to start a claim under the workman's comp law. I don't know how much depth I have to go into to have you understand the present arrangement, but it's, presently there is a form we, the business we're calling the 801, which is notice from the workman to the employer, and then from the employer to the insurance company that there has been an injury and that they in fact agree that it was on the job and whatnot. The initial step is made by the workman. We feel that the statute, at least that we've been advised by the workman's comp board, that the statute precludes an arrangement in which the doctor could provide this initial notice to the employer, and we would like the initial notice to the employer to be, we wish it to be allowed that we can do what the statute asks, which is to address to the employer the who, when, where, and how the injury occurred, all of which happens on the, subsequently happens on the, form that I put before you, which is known as the 827. Normally, this sort of material is left in the a board's hands or a bureau's hands. In this case, we haven't written into the law, so we apparently need a law change to accomplish what we need. The present arrangement is that the when, where, and how are substantially stated on the 827. We have to have this form out of our office in 3 days. We feel that's as quick as anybody reports to the employer about his injury. And we would like it to be at the bottom of the form that you now have in your hand that states that the employee is notifying the employer. We'd like that to have legal effect. And so that the problem we're attempting to remedy is the employer, who is a small employer, who doesn't do a very good job of getting the 801 in, will lose more quickly. And remedy our problem, which is to continue with having to call the small employers to remind them of their responsibilities and the law.
Of course, I can see a problem, unless somebody suggests to me, I don't see any problem with amending it this way, but you're simply looking for a vehicle. Should the committee judge that we don't want to do anything further on 129, you wouldn't mind if we pass this to another bill?
Not at all. No, we did this way simply because it mentions the notice statute was the only bill in the hopper that did.
Kind of cagey about that. You must have some advice or something.
I get an amendment for this way, and I have to pass it in both houses to send it back to the Senate. They agree with it.
Give me more credit than I deserve. Thank you. Yes, that probably is a motive. The problem here is that we do need this. We feel we need it. I took this to the advisory board of the Workers' Compensation Board Advisory Committee, and they were neither for or against it. They're asking about it, so it's not really a controversial matter. It's simply a matter of convenience for the doctor. We are extending credit rather liberally to workmen who are injured, and we need this assistance in getting the 801 started so that we do in fact guarantee our payment.
Okay, any questions? I got to get these amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Anyone else want to testify on 129? 180. Mr. Gill, sitting patiently all evening to testify, and finally we're ready.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Charles Gill, and manager of the State Accident Insurance Fund, and this is a bill that was submitted by the fund to the Labor and Industries Committee of the Senate. It's a housekeeping bill. For purposes of explanation, under the workman's compensation law, we have a term of a non-complying employer, who is a employer that is subject to the law but does not have insurance. And usually they come to light by an employee getting injured and filing a claim. When that occurs, that the drafters of the law in 65 have provided provisions to take care of the injured worker. The way this is done is that the State Accident Insurance Fund picks up the claim and pays it, and then recovers the money from the Workman's Compensation Board that they pick up from all carriers or all employers. It goes into a special fund. Special reserve, a non-complying employer reserve. One other thing that happens is that initially when the law was passed, the old State Compensation Department